Thanks for downloading this episode of the Simcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by searching for the Simcast wherever they get their podcasts. The Simcast on RS1.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Simcast. I'm Matt Hunter, and alongside me... Oh, this is episode 45, by the way. November the whatever. I said 45. I've done that bit. I'm Matt Hunter. Alongside me is Jordan Groves. Hello, Jordan.
Hello, Matt. Just going down the checklist.
Gee, the way my brain is at the minute, yeah.
Yeah? Why was that so sassy?
I need a checklist to make sure I've put my socks on right at the minute. It's not even...
Gotta make sure you put the right sock on the right foot and the
next. Yeah, make sure you put your pants on the right way round and
yeah. That does help.
Make sure you're not walking around
eating pants at all.
Well, I was about to say, make sure you're not flying low. That could really be problematic, couldn't it, if you're not even wearing any pants. Not wearing pants means something different in England to what it does in America. Just so. Because if I was about to say I was walking around town not wearing any pants, in America I'd probably get arrested.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's multiple reasons why you probably would be anyway, but...
Over here, shut up. Over here, you just get casual. But yeah, anyway. It's November, unbelievably, somehow, that has happened.
It's almost like halfway through November as well, by the time we've gotten to a show.
This is quite something.
Ugh. We're going to have to do Christmas soon.
You need to do the what's it for the awards.
Well, we need to.
We need to do the what's it for the awards. this is a democracy, people.
I was going to say, you're no Palpatine.
No, I am not the Senate.
If you're Palpatine, I am Mon Mothma.
I am the size of... I mean, it could be the size of a Senate sometimes, depending on what I've had, but...
That's not
it's just... Yeah, no. We've gone back to the no pants conversation, haven't we? do you know, this is quite new, actually. It's going to be one of the first shows that you and I have done, and I don't think we're going to mention iRacing, like, once.
Well, now we have, so...
Well, not in a... not in a subject of conversation-y way, in a more of a highlighting its absence.
Yes. Well, I mean, we're going to make the most of this opportunity to not talk about it, because in about a couple of weeks or so, we're going to be talking about content updates. So it'll go from no iRacing to all iRacing very quickly.
Shall we then talk about... I'll just see what you meant about the thing is going negative. That's cool. Quite like that. Shall we talk about the title that we don't often talk about, which is R Factor 2?
Yes.
And it's something that actually that you and I... Now, I got very excited, then you got very excited, and I think we were both... Actually, no, I'm not going to finish that sentence, because it's getting weird.
We have gone too far already.
This is all getting weird. So, so you and I are both touring car fans.
Mm-hmm.
I was around when Toka 2 came out.
I was around. It's just I'm.
You weren't playing sim racing.
No, I wasn't able to reach pedals or anything like that. I think considering I started the first time I played a sim was probably in about 2010.
Yes.
Or 8. No, 2008 was the first time I played. Well, it was Toka sim actually.
Well, when you were 2, would have been the last time that Croft and Thruxton were officially used in a sim racing title.
I mean, I might have been a touch older, but I do get the inference.
It was 1990. For those people going, well, how old is he now? 1998 was the last time.
I know, I was too.
Yeah. I can do maths.
I just wondered whether you knew what year I was born.
Yeah. Yes, I do. Child. Yes, 1998 was the last time that these two circuits were officially... Now, obviously, there's been a number of pretty good quality mods produced for these circuits. I'd love to know how they do them, because they have been very good. The Thruxton ones that I've been using on Assetto Corsa have been amazing. But to have these two circuits in our Factor 2 laser scanned for the first time ever, I think has brought a new, well, obviously it's brought a new level of realism to the circuits to what we've been used to for the last 20 years, which is a terrifying thing to say. But it also, when joined to the BTCC content, shows just how damn hard these touring car drivers actually have to drive at some of these circuits.
Yeah, just a touch. So I've played these two new tracks, yes. Croft and Thruxton. I knew both of them through, as you said, aforementioned mods, particularly on Assetto Corsa. And yeah, you mentioned these mods that are made without any actual data. They're pretty damn incredible to get as close as they do. However, it's only when you get a laser scan version that you can really see just how close or how far these mods are away from reality.
Yeah.
The Croft mod I've driven before was pretty good. Like I was able to jump on Croft and pretty much pick it up straight away. It was more of a case of learning the car that we'll get onto in a moment. Whilst we're talking Croft, probably my favourite track of the update, to be honest, because it's something about it. Just that it's the level, it balances perfectly technical sections with really fast, scary sections. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a really, really underrated track. I'm
astounded it's not actually been in anything else since, because it's such a good circuit.
Yeah, and I hope that its inclusion here might boost its notoriety elsewhere, maybe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kind of how like Lime Rock's inclusion in Forza Motorsport kind of saw more people pay attention to that track internationally. So
yeah.
Hopefully this will do the same. But then we move on to Thruxton. Yay. And this is where I know this is the one that you're particularly looking forward to, and I think any British motorsport fan was looking forward to this just because of Thruxton. It is the fastest and probably
circuit in the
scariest
country.
Track in this country.
Yes.
Now, I'd driven this track also on an unofficial mod for Assetto Corsa, and this is where the Croft one was pretty accurate. The Thruxton one, as it turns out, was missing something quite important, and that was
bumps.
Exactly. I had no idea, really, that it was as bumpy as it was at the far side.
Did you know it's a little known fact that Thruxton is actually Sebring's British cousin?
Well, I believe it now. God. I had no idea. Like the
have you
the
not
lap at the end of the lap. I've watched racing there, but you can't. Like, I've never seen the bumps really fully translated through the television.
When you watch them going go through sort of the back end, so the sort of double right hander before Church
Goodwood, and it's the corner.
Yeah, and the camera is always you're looking at the rear of the car as they're going round that in towards Church. And you watch the way the back is bucking and weaving. Yeah. It's off camber. You don't appreciate just how off camber it is either.
Mm. I always thought that was more because the only racing I've ever really watched there is British Touring Car.
You wouldn't watch the superbikes, bud.
See, I don't watch bike racing.
Oh.
I watched the final laps of the three British superbike races that were there earlier this year. And they were amazing, but bike racing isn't my thing. But you're right; that would highlight more how bloody scary that is.
when you watch British superbikes there, you sort of wonder how the guys are able to straddle the bike with balls the size of watermelons. Because yeah, it's a special circuit that there's two. So, but I mean, so as someone who's been going there for 30 years, even as a spectator venue, it's a bit naff because you can't go the whole way around it, which is fine. Mm. And up until fairly recently, where you can now go much further around, they sort of flattened out some more banking so you can go a bit further around. But the thing I always found funny about it is that you can stand at there's a couple of parts of the circuit where you can pretty much see the whole entire circuit except for whatever chicane you're not at.
Yeah.
But you're constant. It's a bit like Brands Hatch in a way, because you're constantly doing something. You are never relaxing here.
No, exactly. And yeah, the lack of the bumps in the previous titles meant that. So everyone talks about Church, because Church is a terrifying corner. Like,
I find Allard worse.
See, the one for me, Allard is tricky enough. Again, I'd only really driven the trap before in high downforce, so before it was easy, but yeah. Having driven it now in a touring car, it's a lot harder. But now, the corner I'm struggling with most is Goodwood, because of the bumps leading up to it, and because of just the awkwardness of the car I was driving in terms of how much downforce it had. I was constantly going off before I even got to Church.
Yeah.
So it's I nearly swore then. It is an absolutely fantastic track, and I like track. Usually,
and he didn't
I pick up
say frickin'.
I know. usually, I pick up tracks pretty easily. Like the third track that we'll talk about in a minute, I picked up strangely quickly, which is weird considering what it is. But Goodwood is a track that I might be able to. I know where it goes, but it's going to take me a long time to get comfortable there. And I think that's a sign that it's been done well.
So for me. I agree with Goodwood, the Goodwood corner. That is a toughie. For me, and this was the same back in the Toka 2 days as it is now, weirdly. And like I said, I've driven on this circuit for real. The entry to the first entry to both chicanes, because the track is kind of weird, like when you're going through any of the corners, it kind of you kind of tunnel vision quite quickly. So you can kind of see exactly where you need to be, and there is pretty much one line, and otherwise insta-death. Yep. But when you get to the chicanes, the track kind of, it does actually, and for the second chicane, I'm pretty certain it actually does, widen quite significantly. It widens quite a bit, and I think it lulls you into a false sense of security, because you're also coming over a crest. So your braking point isn't quite where you think, and if you brake where you think you should be braking, you're missing the chicane.
100%.
Yeah. Yeah. It's such a weird. And even the first one, Campbell Culper Seagrave, they suck you in. You can do what used to be called the Swedish shuffle, which is Rickard Rydell back in the 90s used to brake later, go around the outside of the corner, which would look like he was going to overshoot, but it would make him very much on the inside. Going for Cobb, which is the left-hand part, and he'd be immediately in front of the person he was trying to pass, and then he'd just sit on the corner so they couldn't overtake him in Seagrave. And, yeah, I've tried that. I've not really done it right. but I can't wait to see, and I really hope that, obviously, Motorsport UK getting very much into the esports side of things now, and with multiple series now that they are looking after. I really, really hope in 23 we see a fully realised touring car where they can use BTCC, but you know, fully realised touring car esports series with those cars. I think it'll just be so good to watch.
Definitely.
Right, okay, we've got to stop talking about touring cars and stuff like that.
Well, because we have to very briefly talk about touring cars because of one of the cars that's also been added.
Oh, yeah, of course, you have to talk about the car, what you was driving.
Yes, again, we knew after last week that this was coming, but the BMW, why am I blanking on the name? 335?
See, I'm stuck on the
320. Touring car from this year.
I'm still stuck on the 320i, so there's no point in asking me.
330i.
Okay, I was one bit out.
Yeah, I know. So the BMW 330i M Sport was also added into the game at the same time. Driven that as well, and I don't want to like BMW because of everyone knows the stereotypes of people who drive them on the real world. Huh. However, this has become my favourite of the touring cars they've released so far. It is an utter joy. The feeling of the back end coming round, like I think it might be more because I'm more used to rear-wheel drive cars than front-wheel drive cars, but
yeah,
it just feels epic. Even more so than the Infiniti.
I was just about to say, did you drive the Infiniti much?
Yeah, and you can feel the similarities, sure, but there's something about the way the BMW in particular feels. I can't put my finger on it, but it is utterly superb. I love that car. And I must admit, it probably wasn't the best idea for Thruxton, because at least if I were going to have a moment at Thruxton, I could rely on a front-wheel drive car to boot me out of the problem. But I did have more fun. So there's that. So yeah, highly recommend those three bits. And then the last bit of content that we can review, because the other two bits I haven't bought, but we'll mention that they've come out. The London Ypres track. This was announced after last week's show, so we didn't know this was coming yet.
Tell us,
this is... I have a weird love for Formula E tracks. I know they're not everyone's cup of tea, because they're viewed as a bit Mickey Mouse, but London in particular is a perfect Formula E track, because it's got all of the tight zones that you need for a Formula E to work, for both for regen and for overtaking. But the high speed sections on this track are equally scary. Like the just after the double hairpin section, which incidentally wasn't actually part of the layout they used this year, so hopefully we might get a this year version somewhere down the pipeline, because they just skipped that. But there's a really high speed section after the double hairpins where you legit just get air.
Nice.
And it's terrifying. But I said this about the track in real life when Formula E went there, and it's the same obviously in the simulator scanned. It's like whenever you go to an indoor kart track and they have a little section outside as well.
Yeah.
It feels like the natural progression of indoor karting. It's so cool, you know, going up the ramp into the XL Center in the sim. I don't know whether it's a placebo, because they said in real life that the inside surface is a lot grippier than anywhere else. I think I felt that, but I'm not sure whether that was just a placebo. My mum is telling me that I should feel that, so maybe someone better than me will actually be able to tell me that. But it is a really, really fun track. It's really challenging, especially with the ramps going up and down. The ramp coming down out of the XL Center is terrifying, because you have to brake a lot earlier than you think, because suddenly you're plummeting down a hill. It's really, really good. I'd fully recommend that. If you've got the Formula E car on R-Factor 2, you're probably going to get this anyway. But if you were in two minds about it, you're definitely going to get this anyway. It's really good.
All I'm expecting, apart from enjoying some Formula E races around it at some point, is just seeing what utterly stupid things people try to drive around it.
It's funny, like normally that would be my go-to, but I haven't actually tried it yet. And I'm trying to think of what I need to take around there. See, there aren't any trucks on R-Factor 2 that I know of.
There'll be a mod, I'm sure.
I'm sure, but I'm wondering if they'll get into the XL Center, so there's only one way to find out.
Exactly.
But yeah, just lastly, of course, with the Q4 content drop that came out of all of these, what's also come is Bahrain and the Van War, as the guys mentioned on the show last week. Haven't gotten around to testing it yet. However, I've heard from many of the people that have driven it that the Van War is particularly impressive. So if you're a fan of Le Mans hypercar cars that may or may not ever see a real racetrack,
I was going to say,
then definitely get it.
Well, no, I mean, physically exists, and it is physically testing. It's just whether it actually sees competition, I suppose.
Yeah.
Just call it Baikonur again. I'm sure they'll let them back in.
Yeah, I don't understand why they're getting so hung up on the name, and that's literally the sole reason they haven't raced so far. You would have thought they would have just taken the step to just call it a Baikonur.
But there's a random Italian coach builder, is it? I can't remember what it's called. It ends with I, I think. That's trying to, or has apparently set up a hypercar program.
Yeah, I saw it the other day. I cannot remember who it was.
It is an odd one, isn't it? It's a very strange. Should I talk about the Fanatec news whilst you're looking that up?
Go for it.
Okay. So Fanatec have decided. Goodness knows why, there's probably a good reason, has decided that their podium racing wheel, which one is it, the DD? CSL DD? No. It's the one that goes with PlayStation anyway. Yes, it's the PlayStation one. Is going to be reduced quite a lot, which is nice. So
it's the podium racing wheel. It's not the actual
podium racing wheel. Oh, okay.
I don't think it's the actual base. It's just the wheel.
No, it's the wheel and the base. That comes with the wheel and the base, the PlayStation one.
Oh, all right. So that would be with.
I'd expect it for that price tag.
Yeah, you would hope.
Maybe the
I think
DD1.
It is the DD1.
Yeah. Well, I suspect this is probably because they're likely, I reckon, to be replacing it soon. That's probably
that was
why.
Exactly my theory as well. Yeah.
So nearly 30% has been lopped off the price. I think their website's been crashing all day.
Yeah, haven't they temporarily postponed it or something? Because
they did. Yeah, because too many people were trying to get on the site. So in dollary dues, it was $1,700. Well, nearly $1,800 dollary dues. It's now $1,200. Oh, someone's just walked over my grave. Goodness me.
Isotta Francini was the Italian manufacturer. There we go.
Them.
Anyway, carry on.
And yeah, again, 1790, so nearly 1800 euros. So now basically 1300 euros. 2799. I keep seeing that as AUD. I keep seeing that as Audis.
Brilliant.
Australian dollars. It's now 2,000 Australian Audis. Or you can get a bundle with the Loadcell Club Sport pedals, the Club Sport pedal V3s, which are very good, and you can get that in dollary dues for 1,500 dollary dues, 1,500 euros, or 2,300 Audis.
Yeah. It's a hefty price cut, but I think what we alluded to just there is that they might be bringing in a replacement or something like that.
Yeah.
If you're unsure still as to whether I'm going to get this, I don't know. I would wonder with the way that direct drive technology has been becoming more and more normalized and has been becoming cheaper. I wouldn't put it past Fanatec to be releasing a new product that's cheaper than this anyway.
Mm.
So. It's a thing. If you've had your heart set on this wheel for a while, and get it now. But if you're considering your options and you're not fully sold, then A, there are still cheaper options out there. And personally, I don't like the look of the blue wheel anyway.
No.
But maybe hold off and wait and see, because not only could the replacement for this end up being cheaper and just around the corner, probably next year.
Yeah,
we've got a Thrustmaster DD that's being announced literally in a couple of weeks.
True.
We don't know yet what price range they're going for or much at all because of their terrible marketing that's gone on forever. But we are about to find out more about it, so maybe it's worth holding off on that as well. So, but I fully expect that by the time this show actually goes out, all of these will have probably been sold anyway.
Yes.
So we will see. But yes. It's a good discount anyway. You just wait to see why.
I mean, what I find really interesting about these at the minute, and again, you know, kind of like we were saying about whether Fanatec is bringing out a new one soon. I sort of wonder whether the same might be happening with, not necessarily the same, but similar might happen with Simicube, because obviously we heard last week about their new pedals that are coming out. But what I find quite interesting, the DD1 with 20 meters of torque is probably all the wheel that you'd need. I don't really know why, because I'm trying to think what the DD2 is. I know it's a lot more. It's probably like 35 or something stupid.
I think it is definitely above 25. I don't know whether it's above 30. But we've had a similar discussion on the show before about how most racing cars don't have an output torque-wise, unless you're having a horrendous accident, of above 15. So like even above 20, I don't see the point. That's why we see 5 newton meter, 8 newton meter options being so popular, not just because of the cost, but because you don't need more, really.
No. And what I found particularly interesting was the fidelity of the granular feedback, if you like, that you get. Apparently, the gap is significantly bigger between the lower one. I'm talking about Simicube here. So the Sport to the Pro, but when you go higher than the Pro to the Ultimate, the fidelity gain is way less.
Yeah.
I think that's the same with the Fanatec kit as well. So I think if you've got the DD1, that's the best of both worlds, because you've got a really good amount of torque in the wheel, but you've probably also got the the sweet spot of feedback as well. I think as soon as you go over that, like you said, you're just going to have yourself an accident, really.
And then by that point, it's so strong, you aren't feeling anything more. Like, the whole point of DD is that it is more detailed, and you can feel little subtle things that you wouldn't with more with exactly. lower powered things. So if it's too strong, you're focusing so much on the effort of trying to just turn the wheel that you're not feeling, your mind isn't open and receptive to that extra detail that you could be getting. So it's a, like all things with sim racing, it's balance and the force and other stuff. I don't know.
Nice. Are you one with the force feedback?
Well, I mean, if you have the feedback turned up too high, then you might very quickly become one with the force. Or at least lose a wrist or something, I don't know. Which also tends to happen a lot in Star Wars, in fairness.
I was going to say, I believe it's known as doing a Luke.
I think that is what did Mace Windu in. He had his DD turned up too high, but...
There's too much feedback on this wheelbase.
I've had it with all this Newton meters in my arm.
Dear, oh dear. Anyway, so we were talking...
We were talking about Fanatec originally.
We're talking about Fanatec, and now we're talking about Newton meters on a plane. God. Anyway, I'm actually talking about the lower range, the lower torque range. CSL DD is out of stock until quarter 1/23.
Well, that shows how popular it is, doesn't it?
I got a feeling. The thing is, because I still am a member of a couple of Fanatec sites, even though I'm moving away from their stuff. And the CSL DD sold out really quick, because obviously it's good. It does not mean bad piece of kit. With 8 newton meters max of torque, with a, I can't remember what they call it, like a power boost thing that you can buy separately. And it's pretty much out of stock, with like small little dribbles of stock coming through since its release. It's one of two things. Either it succumbed to the supply issues related that have, you know, hounded everything for the last 3 years, or it is that popular, or it's a happy mixture of both. Who knows?
It's they've said that it seems to be all three. I believe it's like semiconductors or something are massively in demand at the moment. So that has had an impact on a whole swathe of gaming things, not just wheels. But again, it does seem to show how popular it is anyway. But also, it's also affected the other Fanatec wheel that was meant to be coming out relatively soon, which was the Bentley GT3 steering wheel. That they've also announced in the last couple of days that has now been delayed until, they're saying, the first quarter of
2023.
And again, they're listing semiconductor issues as well as issues with the screen. Now, you might remember we spoke about this when it was first announced. This is the wheel that was used in the Pikes Peak car that has a LCD screen in the middle, which is on a gyro. So it always stays level even when you're turning the wheel. You know, Fanatec haven't had a big LCD screen in a wheel, so the first time they do it, they go for this one, which is a bit of a strange decision. That has also been delayed.
I remember when this got announced and we talked about it on the show, and I was obviously very, very pleased because I liked me a race in Bentley. But you know, the more I've sort of looked at things like GSI, like Rexing, Cube, and SimLab, with Grid doing the Porsche wheels. I will own that wheel. I remember people saying, "Oh, it looks a bit like a toy, this Bentley one." And I have to say, the more I've sort of like looked at it now, I've been looking at, you know, and using a lot of, you know, PC based things like that. It's twofold for me. Firstly, the looks I'm not sold on anymore, and secondly, it's a wheel for a vehicle that doesn't exist anymore, really.
That's it. It's priced. It's going to be priced high because it's a one-to-one replica, and again, it's one of those wheels that you can take out of one and put in the other, which is still a stupid gimmick because who is going to be able to do that?
Yeah, quite.
Then you've got the added, at least with the BMW wheel, that car still exists. Races, this was a car that doesn't exist and only existed for one specific purpose. Yeah. And yeah, whilst the aesthetics, I've not been a fan of the aesthetics for a while, but it can't really be blamed on fans because it's a replica. So, you know, that's just down to the designing. So, damn you, Bentley, basically. But no,
how dare you stop racing before we get this wheel?
It just makes me confused when you think they have had Formula One style rims, but they haven't had a Formula One style rim with commonplace LCD screen that we have today.
Yeah.
The only one we've had is, as we mentioned with the Podium F1 wheel, was a little tiny screen that just had your gear indicator in it, not anything else. So it does bemuse me as to why they've gone for the more niche areas of the market before tackling the stuff that's more likely to be widely sold, to be honest.
And you think that, so that BMW wheel, oh god, I can't even think how much it's
too much.
It's probably about 12.
I will research quickly.
It's probably about 1200 quid, maybe a bit more. Actually, if it is 1200 quid, I'd actually probably say, oh, actually, given the scheme of things, probably not that bad. Given the GSIs are about 1300.
Available for pre-order.
Hmm. What, the GT?
The M4 GT4.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For €1,399.
Okay. And do you know what bothers me about that?
Mm.
So that is again, it's one that you can take out of your car, put in your real car. But that's 1300 quid for something that just has a little LCD screen on it, whereas 1300 quid will buy you a seriously good, quote-unquote, Formula wheel from GSI, from Cube Controls, almost from Rexing, and countless other people.
Well, not being funny, like, the more accurate area to compare this type of wheel, if we just take this wheel and compare it price, like, what would you pay for this wheel rather than what you could get for the money they're charging at?
Mm-hmm.
The Thrustmaster SF1000 wheel is 300 and something.
Yeah.
It's like a grand less for this, basically a better version of what it is.
Yeah. I this now is not the time to bring up the price of the officially licensed SimLab Porsche 911 RSR wheel.
But then you've also got to factor into that it is a, like, all of these companies like Fanatec, like Thrustmaster, are much more of a mainstream mass market kind of thing, whereas the companies like that, they produce a lot less, but they do it at a higher quality, they do it for a smaller audience, so therefore the price is a lot more.
Yeah, though that
whether
wheel
it's
is
worth it or not, who knows, because it is an amazing wheel.
Which one, sorry?
The Porsche.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but again, though, that is meant to be one that you could basically take out of this car and put it in a real car.
It's just a stupid gimmick. Like,
it is a little, but at least they don't say it.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, at least they don't carry on about
what
it.
What I will say, though, and this is something I have noticed, is that everything that's plastic on a Fanatec, for the same price, if you get it as a GSI, as a Cube, as a Sim Lab, or whatever, will be aluminium, will be carbon fiber. There won't be any plastic. There will be, if there is any plastic, it will be absolutely minimal. It's weapons grade. It's automotive grade everything.
Mm.
You know, but this is the thing, you're paying the same price, but for much sturdier stuff. And I know what you're saying, Fanatec's a little bit more mass market, but, you know, if it's mass market, it's a bit, I don't know, funny one. It's a funny one. Wheels, honestly. The reason why we're sort of dragging this out a little bit is because, actually, no, this next bit is, I can do this one, Jordan. I can do this one really quickly. You know that game, Project Cars, that we didn't give up about for a very long time, certainly didn't give about on the third instance, and barely did for the first two because they were broke? It doesn't exist anymore. It's dead. Rest in peace, Project Cars. Bye-bye.
The extended version.
Go on then.
First, Project Cars 1 and 2 were broken on the console, not the PC.
I know, I'm just being sour.
Yeah, but we shouldn't just be sour.
You're here.
This is a lot sad. This is a sad thing, but also because of the third one, it's a good thing.
The third one has let the side down.
Yeah, 1 and 2 were flawed, but were the first example of a viable alternative for the console market that was going in the right direction, you know.
Yep.
And they did a lot of good things. If nothing else, Project Cars 1 and 2 gave us Automobilista 2, so at least there's that. this is the announcement that Project Cars has been killed by EA. You may remember that Project Cars, Slightly Mad Studios, were acquired by Codemasters, who were then acquired by EA. Project Cars put out a statement on their Twitter page saying that they had made the sad decision to end the franchise or cancel the next iteration because they were reportedly working on Project Cars 4. We know not why, although we also know that it's probably due to conflicting with the other titles that EA holds, maybe a redistribution of the licenses that Project Cars held, and also due to the fact that after the third one they had basically nuked their player base that they had been working so hard to build.
Yes.
Whilst for many people, and I do understand the Project Cars 3, you know, because of that, a lot of people will see this news as a, oh well, and to an extent I do. I think I tweeted as much. It is a shame because there was a lot of potential with Project Cars 1 and 2, but it just, rather than be annoyed that it was cancelled, be annoyed with what they did to 3, which led to its cancellation.
Mm.
The other sad thing that this has done, because there's no point really talking about Project Cars anymore because it's gone. The sad thing it has done, though, is that it has brought Ian Bell back into the news.
Oh dear.
Because Mr. Ian Bell, for those of you who don't know, the founder of Slightly Mad Studios, who left Slightly Mad Studios again, or Project Cars, I can't keep count, because of some stuff. I don't know, he left anyway. He has now brought his own, or made his own development team, I suppose. So it's going to be good, obviously. Sarcasm dripping from my mouth. He has been talking about reviving GTR, which in isolation would be a good thing.
I would love the idea of that if it wasn't him doing it.
Exactly.
Have you noticed on his Twitter thing, it's Ian Bell, something unique and massive coming. Is that another way of saying his ego?
There are so many jokes I could say.
I say this, I'm being slightly sarcastic, but then having read that particular tweet that he's put out about stuff, you kind of go, burning bridges much?
Yeah, exactly. But so he has come out and seems to be suggesting that he is going to try and rehire the people that were at Slightly Mad Studios working on Project Cars to work on the GTR revival project. And he can complain. He's been complaining on Twitter about how EA cancelled Project Cars, and he was saying that they continue to prove him right on everything that he said about them. But at the end of the day, he was the one in the creative charge of Project Cars when they released 3.
Yeah.
He was the one who hyped it up as the next big sim, and then simultaneously announced that there would be no pit stops because they were boring and detracted from the racing. As much responsible for the downfall of Project Cars 3 and the Project Cars franchise as anyone else, if not more responsible, because he was the one at the top.
I'd love to know what sort of racing fan he is if he thinks that pit stops detract from the excitement and whatnot of racing.
Yeah, no, he's... When he thinks of... He's the sort of person who would say, oh, I'm a big fan of racing. Yeah, I do bumper cars all the time when I'm at the fairground. You know, he's just... I don't want to say he's talking out of his ass, but he's talking out of his ass, basically. And I do worry for... Because GTR has been one of the stalwarts of sim racing. You know, it's got a legendary reputation, yeah. And I am worried that he will be successful in actually bringing it back, because it could ruin that reputation.
The thing is, though, he's limited as to what he can do, because GTR fund isn't, but Assetto Corsa Competizione is basically the nowadays version of what GTR was, the official FIA GT racing game.
Mm.
So he can't do that because the license is with Kunos.
Mm.
So well, it won't be that.
His last update was that many of the GTR2 guys are already with us, and most of the PCars2 superstars want to join. GTR Revolution is going to be full hardcore. Remember him saying that about Project Cars 3?
I remember him saying that about lots of things.
It's already building. Input welcomed. Do you know what input I have, Ian? Go away.
Don't do it.
Just go away and do something else. Just
haven't you made enough money by ruining people's hopes and dreams?
Go take more weird selfies in the mirror with your shirt off.
God, I was hoping that wasn't real.
And just don't do anything in sim racing anymore, because you ruined Project Cars yourself, and we don't want you to ruin GTR. And that's the tea.
And chill.
Needless to say, we won't be having Ian Bell on the show anytime soon.
No, well, we used to get Andy Jude on Bessin.
Anyway. Speaking of EA Codemasters, kind of, very quick news, it appears that, sort of under the radar, Dirt Rally and Dirt 4 have been removed from all online storefronts.
Yeah.
Might seem a bit of a shock, but it isn't. This is most likely going through the same thing that Forza recently did, where the it's reached end of life status, and with the licenses that go into these games, once they expire, you can't make any more new profit on them. So they have to delist them. This doesn't mean you won't be able to play them. You'll still be able to play them if you have them already in your library, but you just won't be able to buy them anymore. Dirt 4, I mean, we've already got the replacement. Like Dirt 5, Dirt Rally, we've got 2.0, so at least, unlike Forza, they have the next version of the game out already, so that not many people are going to care as much. So that's that little bit of quick news there.
Gran Turismo movie, Jerry Halliwell, I saw that, and I was like, really?
I really don't want to talk about this.
Well, I'm just going to say that Jerry Halliwell Horner is part of the Gran Turismo movie. And that's it.
In better news, they have also cast Jimon Honsu. I'm sure I'm butchering the pronunciation of his name, and I apologise. Also, he's going to be in the film. I knew I recognised him. He played Ronan the Accuser in Guardians of the Galaxy. And he was also in Captain Marvel. Okay. And he was quite good in them. So there you go. You got to balance it out. You get one shit actor. I probably shouldn't have said that.
You have now. someone who once had a major band in the 90s. Whilst he's corpsing himself, the Jimmy Broadbent charity race has been announced.
Yes, in actual news that we do care about, and this is a really good thing.
the race for mental health at Zolder.
I love... These races are always just utter memes in the best way. They are fantastic, and that's if we're not even talking about the amount of money they raise, because they raise so much.
He's already raised over £1,000. It hasn't even started.
He's raised £1,724, and the race isn't until the 10th of December. It's literally a month away, so it's mad. The combination that they're using, they're going back to Zolder as they always do. And they are using a 3-class system of the current V8 supercar, the Kia Optima, and the Mazda MX-5.
Excellent.
That's just going to be chaos, and I'm here for it. I don't know, especially Zolder. Yeah. The entries for these things usually go very, very quickly, so I'm sure by the time we've mentioned this, it'll have already gone. But team entries are £15, and you can enter this if you want to. So we will tweet out some links for this on our social media. So, more importantly, donate if you can, but also if you're interested in entering, you can.
Didn't you do the one at Imola?
Yes, that was... So, yeah, these Race for Mental Healths that have been looking up at the end of the year, during the pandemic in 2020, he did one at Imola. It was 3 hours or something like that, of Imola.
Yeah.
And yeah, we did that, and that was one of the most interesting sim racing experiences I've ever had, considering I was only I'd only been on iRacing for 9 or 10 months at the time.
Mm.
Me and my teammate were up against Kelvin van der Linde. various other racing drivers. Bruno Spengler was there. It was very, very scary. But it, again, or as with all of Jimmy's things, they raised so much money.
Mm.
And, yeah, this is always one of the highlights of the year, just seeing how the sim racing community comes together to raise so much money. And in this case, once again, they are raising money for Mind, which is a very, very important cause. So, yes, please go to our social medias, find the links that we'll post, and donate if you can.
And now it's that time of the week, ladies and gentlemen. It's time for the Esports Roundup of the Week, where I get to rest my voice and Jordan gets to say everything. Brought to you
by... like the rest of the show.
Oh, shush. Brought to you by the... You say everything sensible. Brought to you by the game... I'm here for fluff. Brought to you... Fourth time lucky. Brought to you by The Gaming Athlete. Head on over to thegamingathlete.com. to learn more about how to reach athlete status in gaming by maximizing your performance and restoring your well-being. Once again, that's thegamingathlete.com. Also on Twitch, The Real Don Jew. 300 followers. Congratulations, Don. Over to you, Mr. Jordan Groves.
Right, so we've had the penultimate trio of races in the F1 Esports Pro Series for 2022. The first of these races took place at Monza, with Nicholas Longue starting on pole position for Alfa Romeo. Barry Borroman for McLaren would take the lead at the Retafilio chicane on lap one, and it would ultimately end up being a race of opposing strategies, with all three tyre compounds on display at the start of the race up and down the grid. I do like how they've incorporated strategy more and more into these things with longer races, etc. It just makes it a little bit better. Ultimately, the strategy race would see Burramond in the lead in the closing stages, but with Haas's Thomas Ronhar gaining fast. A supremely well-timed move on the final lap saw Ronhar take the lead into the Ascari chicane, a lead that he would not relinquish for the remainder, as he came home to his second career win in F1 Esports. The second race of the event would take place at Mexico, the Hermanos Rodriguez circuit. Red Bull's Freddy Rasmussen would start on pole position, with Mercedes' Jarno Otmir quickly moving up into the challenging positions into second place in the early stages. During the pit stop cycle mid-race, Otmir would overcut Rasmussen to take the lead of the race, thanks to the tyre temperatures being a lot more important in this game, especially when you come out of the pits. Otmir would virtually have the win decided after that, when Rasmussen held up by a lap car, crucially dropping the Red Bull driver out of DRS range. The battle for second would then implode in the final few laps, with Barry Borroman and Thomas Ronhar eventually claiming second and third, whilst Otmir would, remarkably, claim only his first win of the season. Mad that it's taken him this long, but he got there. Rasmussen would drop out of the points after a penalty for... It looked like a red mist moment as he cut one of the corners to barge into the side of Thomas Ronhar, which was, I'd like to say, uncharacteristic. It's uncharacteristic for Rasmussen, but perhaps not for a Red Bull driver, but the least I say about that, the better. The final race, as I've enraged most of F1 Twitter, the final race of the F1 Esports trio was at the Circuit of the Americas, and it was wet, which was always spicy. Thomas Ronhar started on pole position for Haas. As the race progressed, the weather improved and improved. The drivers pitted from wets to winters, and then from winters to dries later on, with Barry Borroman moving his way past Ronhar during the race to start the final lap in the lead. What followed was an incredible four-way scrap on the final half lap of the race. Ronhar launched himself up the inside of Burman at the end of the backstretch, with both then going wide on the exit, which allowed Otmir to slip underneath them both and take the lead for himself. Then those three, with Brendan Lee, basically went side by side throughout most of the final sector, which was epic, with Otmir just about holding on through the final corners to take his second win of the season and his second in succession, with Ronhar settling for second ahead of Brendan Lee, who also, remarkably, would take only his first podium of the season. As a result of these three races and three strong finishes for Ronhar, the rookie has now moved into second place in the standings and is just 11 points off of championship leader Lucas Blakely. With the final three races left, it's basically Blakely, Ronhar, Borroman, Rasmussen and Otmir all within 22 points of each other and all vying for the championship. So that will be entertaining. Meanwhile, in the team standings, McLaren lead with 101 points over Red Bull. So that's all but decided, but the Drivers' Championship is very, very spicy. The final three races will take place from the 14th to the 16th of December, with races at Suzuka, Interlagos, and Yas Marina deciding the championship.
Awesome. I really need to watch some more of that, because it does look like it's been quite a good season so far.
This season has been good. It's still let down by, you know, the sound glitches and stuff like that, but the actual on-track action is really good, and the changes they made to the format, as I mentioned, they have been very, very good, in my opinion. Cool. Speaking of things that have been very, very good, Le Mans Virtual had its third round of the season at Spa-Francorchamps. In the LMP class, Mercedes-AMG Esports would take their first win in Le Mans Virtual, with James Baldwin, Bono Huis, and Graham Carroll taking the 63 car to the top step of the podium after 171 laps. The two Porsches had been out front, but were left rueing an ill-fated strategy as they dropped out of the top two positions late on. Second place would go to the number one redline car of Jeffrey Reitfeld, Max Benecke, and two-time F1 World Champion Max Verstappen, who made his first appearance in the championship this year. The car ultimately finished just 7 seconds behind Mercedes and might have won had it not been for a mistake from one of their drivers. And it was Max, actually. An overly aggressive move on a lap GT car heading into Eau Rouge saw Max spin at Radeon, and then he almost deleted another car when he rejoined directly into oncoming traffic, which wasn't great. But despite that, which definitely cost them more than seven seconds, you know, they'd still finish second, but it could have potentially been a win. The final spot on the podium would go to the number 8 R8G car of Yuri Toman, Erhan Yuyovsky, and Marcel Chisnik, with the R8G car coming out on top in a bruising last lap fight with the 23 Porsche Coanda car. So from having been 1-2 early on, Porsche didn't even finish the race on the podium. It was a much more straightforward race in GTE class, with the pole sitting 71 redline BMW of Chris Lullum, Kevin Siggy, and Enzo Benito starting on pole position, and crucially maintaining the lead on lap one. From there, they pretty much unchallenged. They ultimately took victory by almost half a minute, with second place going to the 95 Pro Drive Aston Martin of Lasse Sorensen, Lasse Back, and Mikael Gade, with the 77 Proton Command Porsche of Dane Warren, Charlie Collins, and Pachalis Gergis, I apologize, completing the podium. Despite coming up short, the number one Redline LMP now leads the championship after three rounds. Redline also leading the GTE standings, because Redline. The penultimate round of the championship, the 500 miles of Sebring, will now take place on December 3rd, ahead of the big one, the Le Mans 24, in January.
Embraced esports and are actually really, really quite good at it. Got a good lineup. Just need Darren Turner in the car. If he's back, well, no. Well, yeah, Darren Turner would be pretty awesome in it. Anyway, he's awesome in everything.
That's true.
IMSA.
IMSA, yes. The third round of the IMSA esports series. All of the esports series. Normally, this is when we have a bit of a break. Yeah, the third round of the IMSA esports Michelin Global Championship will take place at Indianapolis on Sunday. Once again, it would be another Apex Racing Team victory. The Porsches were out front once again, kind of as they are in iRacing as a whole. It's almost like they're a little bit too quick at the moment. But this time it would not be the 98 car that would take victory. It would be the 97. Jamie Fluke and Johan Haaf would bring the 97 Apex Racing Team car to victory after 112 laps of Indy, with the 98 car having to settle for second with Kevin Ellis Jr. and Alejandro Sanchez. Third and the final spot on the podium in the GTD class would be BS Plus Competition Turner, with Phil Denez and Reina Talvar. They would finish 18 seconds off of the leaders. In the touring car class, it would be a win for the 176 SimRC car of Corentin Guinez and Kieran Harrison. The results table might look a little astonishing, but there's an explanation for it. They are classed as being a lap ahead of the rest of the field. However, that was because they had such a big lead anyway that the leaders managed to lap second place but not first by the time the race finished. So, yeah, technically the number two, the second place car of the Apex Racing Team 199 of Nicole Foggioli and Gael Valero would be classed one lap down, but it wasn't that bad. Third place and the final spot on the TC podium would be the 116 car of Pure Sims Esports with Konstantin Stolzenberg and Ross McFarlane in the Honda taking the final spot. And the next round, and it, actually it's the finale already.
Blimey.
I forgot how short this season was. Will take place in 2 weeks' time on the 20th of November, and that will be at Daytona. Daytona, Daytona Beach.
Anyway, I think that you like that place.
I like Daytona.
Listener, he does not sing about any other circuits.
Virginia International Raceway. No.
God. Yeah. Okay.
Sorry. They usually have a jingle on their show, so I'm allowed to have a jingle on this one.
I was going to say, give me all your Thruxton, all your Crofton, Knock Hills 2.
Good.
Sorry. Heavens. Not sorry. Oh, dear. I can't remember because, my brain melted. Not good, no mo.
Good.
I can't remember timelines, whether the BMW hypercar announcement, or rather the BMW hypercar announcement and what it meant for future IMSA competitions, was last week, or whether that's happened since.
What do you mean as opposed to when iRacing announced what that would mean in the sim?
Yes.
I think that came out mid-show, so yeah, we'll briefly mention that. So iRacing...
It's kind of interesting.
Well, it's also very expected, because... Yep. On iRacing, they have this weird thing where they are only allowed to have eight unique car models within a title or within a series, but something to do with how much processing power this would take, and so they don't have to raise their minimum system requirements. So because of this, IMSA, with all of their unique car models that are in the iRacing IMSA series, the LMP2, all of the GT3 cars, to add the BMW hypercar into the mix, they had to lose one of their pre-existing car models. So what they did was take the basically car out, which was the McLaren GT3 car. So if you race in any of the iRacing IMSA stuff, you won't be able to use the McLaren anymore. The McLaren will still be usable in the VRS GT3 series, but to make way for the hypercar and to meet that 8-car limit, they've replaced the McLaren with the BMW. Then with the European Sprint Series and its associated endurance race, which is more of a replication of the World Endurance Championship. Although if the FIA heard that, they'd probably be very, very mad, but whatever. The BMW hypercar will now replace the previous Audi R18 and the Porsche 919 from 2015 and 16, retrospectively, I believe. So that's somewhat expected, but... I know there's a big community, well, not a big community, but a notable community of people that still race those old LMP1s. So it would be cool to see them bring in a series where they race the older stuff, especially when you consider that GTE is going to be replaced imminently as well.
Yeah.
So it would be cool if they do introduce a series whereby you can still race the older generation of World Endurance Championship, but I guess we'll see. They've done that with other stuff, like there are old IMSA series with the GTP, Nissan, and the Audi GTO. So we'll see whether that happens. I hope so, because the 919 in particular is great, and the Audi just sounds like a tractor. So that's that's a reason to drive them anyway.
Obviously, we've been talking about BTCC quite a bit, and I've just happened to notice on Traction the other day, Ross McGregor did an article, Toka Touring Car Championship at 25 BTCC Gaming at its best. So this is the 1997 game. The number of polys in that, wow. But I'll tell you what a cool game it was. Such a cool game. If you ever get a chance to play the old Toka games on a retro device of some description, please do. And appreciate just how awesome things have come and how and how huge that game was for BTCC, for bringing people like me into it. Well, I was into it anyway, but this really cemented it for me, to be honest. But a lot, you know, a lot of my friends, a lot of people who I talked to as well, they've all said, oh, yeah, no, you know, Toka Touring Cars, that was where it was at. You know, so, yeah, give that a read, guys and gals. And that, my friends, is the end of the show. That's quite something. We've managed to fit it all in. I don't even think there's been even the usual amount of shenanigans. I'm not sure how this is possible.
No. And we only pushed the limits of the watershed only once. So
yeah, and we've only probably not got at least one interview never to happen. So that's fine by me. He's not taking our calls. Thank you ever so much for listening. God willing, I'll be back a couple of weeks. So will Jordan, unless he's been banned. Mind you, if someone complains that he's been bullying, he'll probably be on the cabinet before we know it.
I can't wait to claim that much of a salary for that little amount of work. It's gonna be great.
Yeah,
awesome. The only way is up. Either that, or I'll end up on I'm a Celebrity.
Oh dear Lord. And on that terrifying bombshell, it's time to end. Good night.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production. For more, subscribe to the Simcast, wherever you get your podcasts.